did the first three in the text last week. Let me just make sure I am on. Okay, so we'll go over them again. We'll go over our little color-coded list. Okay, so one, no other gods before me. Two, no idols. Three, don't take God's name in vain. Four, Sabbath. Five, honor your parents. Six, don't murder. Seven, no adultery. Eight, don't steal. Nine, don't bear false witness. This is specifically in the courtroom. We always say don't lie, but that's not the original commandment. And 10, don't covet. Okay? Then we said 1 and 2 tie with number 5, right? So this sets up authority, the position of God. God is above all else, right? And we said command 1, you cannot bring God down. There's no other God. He is Elohim. He is the God of all gods. He is above all else. Okay, the position of God. 2 is the flip side of that same coin. No idols. You cannot take something that is created and elevate it to the position of God. So 1 is don't bring God down. 2 is don't take anything that's supposed to be down and lift it up, elevate it up. Okay, so 1 and 2 are flip sides of the same coin. Okay, and that ties into 5, honor your parents. That is positional authority. God is above all, and the most basic institution that he has set up is parents. And we'll deal more with that today, too, because we only got through the first three commands. Okay. 3, don't take God's name in vain, ties in with 6 through 9, right? And we talked about how don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't steal, don't bear false witness. In the Hebrew, the language 6 through 9 mimics the middle of the third commandment. Okay. And the 6 through 9 are also ways to honor God's name, right? Because name is more than just his title, okay? Name in the Old Testament is the essence of who he is, right? We'll talk about 6 today. Don't murder, right? God is about life, okay? That is who God is. He is the author of life, okay? And so when you honor that, when you don't murder, you are honoring God's name, okay? Sabbath, number 4, ties with number 10, don't covet. We said Sabbath, the true meaning of that is God is sovereign over your time. 10, don't covet. God is sovereign over your stuff. Okay, he tells you what to do and when to do it, and he gives you what you're going to have, and you don't get to covet, want something to the point of sin. Okay, somebody else's stuff, right? We talked about how there's a difference between saying, oh, I would like that, and I would like that to the point of sinning, okay? Doing anything that you have to do in order to get it, okay? Then we talked about how all 10 commandments tie into Genesis 1 to 3. Okay, just really quickly, and if you have questions, please stop me, okay? 1, it says you are to have no other gods before me, and it uses the name Elohim, which is the name for God in Genesis 1, which is repeated over and over and over and over and over again, okay? Genesis 1 really emphasizes that it is God. Every time it can mention God, it mentions God, okay? No idols, right? It says in the waters below and in the heavens and the earth, right? So it's the spheres of creation, and nothing in those spheres are to be made into idols. So that ties into the days of creation. Don't take God's name in vain, right? And I think it says, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God. So that's Yahweh Elohim, which is the name of God in Genesis 1 and 2. So Elohim is 1, Yahweh Elohim is 2. Okay, and we talked about in creation what God names and what he doesn't name, right? He doesn't name, he names day and night. He names all these things, but he does not name the sun and the moon specifically. Okay, 4, Genesis, the Sabbath. In Genesis 2, God creates, start Sabbath. Okay, where God rests, and we've said it many times before, Sabbath was supposed to be the eternal state of man, right? Because God is done working, he is done creating, and now man gets to enjoy everything that he's made. Okay, and like Brittany said before class started, God is the one that is said to stop working in Genesis 2. It is not until the fourth commandment that man is also commanded to not work on Sabbath, right? Because Sabbath was supposed to be the eternal state of man, which obviously then he needed to work. But also the point of Sabbath was to say that God is in charge of our time. Our week revolves around God, okay? then the Pharisees, right, turn it into this very legalistic thing where you can only walk so many steps from your house. Okay, God never said that. He said, cease from your normal job. Okay, that was God's rules, and then man turned it into a laundry list. Okay, honor your parents. We talked about God creating man first, then woman. It's the authority structure that he sets up at creation. Okay, don't murder. Obviously, with Genesis 3, we get the fall, which the punishment of sin is death. And then in Genesis 4, you get the first murder, right? Cain and Abel. No adultery. We talked about how the very first thing that happened when man fell was that he realized he was naked. Okay, loss of purity. Okay, he realizes something that God never created him originally to realize. Right? Because there's loss of purity, there is now sin. Don't steal. We talk about how the woman stole the fruit. God said, you can have everything I give to you except for this thing, this one tree. And what did she take? She took the one thing that God told her not to. Okay, God has lordship. He is the boss. He gets to tell you what to do and not to do, what is yours and what is not yours. And she said, nope, I want what's God's. Okay, don't bear false witness. We talked about this is specifically in a courtroom, like when God says, Adam, what did you do? And he says, God, it's your fault because you gave me the woman and she made me do it. Okay, so Adam blames the woman, then the woman blames the snake, and no one takes responsibility for their actions. Okay, then we talked about don't covet and how the two words used for covet in Command 10 in the NAS, it's at least translated, you shall not covet and you shall not desire. Those same two words are used in Genesis 3, I want to say verse 6, yes, where the woman looks at the fruit. Both those words are used. She is coveting the fruit. She is desiring strongly within her something that has not been given to her. God has said, no, this is not for you. And she desires it to the point of sin. Okay? So you are not to covet. And then we talked about the importance of everything tying back to Genesis 1 to 3, right? Is that these 10 rules, these 10 commandments are the way that God specified that Israel specifically was to live out the creation order. Okay, Israel was to be an example to the nations of this is how life is supposed to be. This is how God created it to be. Okay, this is how it's supposed to work. You nations, you all do your own thing over there. That's wrong. That's not how reality in life is supposed to work. We are to live out the creation order this way. Okay, we as New Testament Christians are no longer under the law. But obviously, we don't go around murdering people, okay? So because everything ties back to Genesis 1 to 3, 1 to 3 has not been Genesis has not been done away with, right? Christ is the fulfillment of the law, right? Which is Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, okay? But Genesis is not done away with. So because these 10 laws are the way that Israel specifically as a nation was to live out the creation order, we are also supposed to live out the creation order, just maybe not specifically in exactly the same way. Okay. Now, most of these 10 are going to apply to us, right? But when we get to the specific stipulations, right, those it's going to be easier to see, well, we don't do that anymore, right? Well, am I breaking the law? Well, we are no longer under the law. We are to uphold the broad principles of creation, but it's going to look different in our lives, right, than in their lives. Maybe it'll look more like the movies we choose to watch or not watch, right? Israel didn't even have that option, right? Or the music we listen to, or, you know, things like that, where it's going to look different for us, but we are in essence doing the same things that they were doing with these specific, like when they didn't mix seed in their field or cloth in their clothes. It was, or they had the tassels on their robes, right? It was ways that God had them stand apart from everybody around them to live out these theological truths. Okay, so we have to remember the Ten Commandments are pointing to theological truths. They are actions that God is saying, do this or don't do this, right? To live out the theology of creation. So we are also supposed to live out the theology of creation. It just might look a little different for us than this. Questions? Yes.
So you mentioned, you know, the number nine there. Yes. False witnesses, you know, originally a courtroom thing.
It's, yes.
Is it then wrong for us to equate it to don't lie?
No, I wouldn't.
That is, that is an implication.
Yes, it's an implication of it, but it's.
It is more than that.
Yes, because when we say don't lie, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, we think of white lies or we think of, you know, don't lie to get out of a situation. Well, a courtroom lie has, I mean, perjury, right, in our nation is punishable by, I don't know, jail time or whatever, okay? But that is a much more serious crime than, you know, oh, mommy, I didn't take the cookie out of the cookie jar, you know? And so this is, it has more weight to it, right? And the first kind of lie, right, was to God himself, which every lie is to God, but very serious, where they had disobeyed God's one command. So I think it just gives it more weight than a just don't lie.
It gives it more weight if you're just saying, you know, because most people in the world don't think lying is bad at all. They're always lying to their boss.
Right, right.
Whatever, and all kinds of things. So it actually says, you know, lying is a big deal because the original intent of that.
Yes.
So lying, in a sense, is a bigger deal.
Yes, then we give. Yes, exactly. Right. Because it's, we are to be about justice and truth, right? And so Adam did not tell the truth. He did not stand up and take responsibility for his actions, right? We, as born-again believers, we are to always be concerned about what is true, and that is what we are going to stake in. And so if that is our conviction, that is going to trickle down to our, I don't tell my boss I'm sick when I'm not sick, right? Or I don't, you know, I'd fess up that I took the cookie out of the cookie jar or whatever. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, and then my last one, my husband and I, because I actually read him a bunch of notes. He was getting really impatient, but he was like, I'm hungry. I'm really almost done. But anyway, his question, though, and I maybe you could expound just a tiny bit on, and you already did a little bit today to what I had when you, on three.
Uh-huh.
Six through nine.
Yes.
Mimic,
yes.
Middle. I didn't have that connection written down.
Okay.
So that was good. But still, he said the word vain.
Yes.
Like take the name of Lord your God in vain.
Yes.
Maybe you can.
So vain literally means nothing. Okay. Not. It says don't. It basically it's saying don't make the name of God into nothing. Okay. And remember, name is more than your title. Okay, we talked about it in Exodus. There are two ways to ask what's your name. There's one that's like, what's your title? Well, my title is Mesha, your title is Julie, your title is Rita, okay? Then there's another way to ask what's your name, which really means who are you? Who are you at your essence? What are you all about? Okay, so when in Exodus 3, when Moses asks God, right, God is saying, hey, go to Egypt. And Moses is doing everything he can to not go to back to Egypt, right? And he's like, well, who should I say sent me? What is your name? He is not saying, who should I say sent me? He's not saying, God, what title do I tell Israel, you know, sent me? He's saying, who are you in essence? And that's when God says, you know, I am who I am in Genesis, in Exodus 3. Okay, so the name of God means much more than just his title. It's who he is as a being. So we talked about command 3, end of last session, right? That this is specific to oath situations, right? So when you make a promise, I swear to do this by Yahweh, right, by God, if you don't follow through, you are saying, my God has no authority to hold me accountable, and really, he's nothing, because I can swear by him, but then I can go and do whatever I want, and there will be no repercussions, right? I can get away with it. This is at least how you are treating God. When you swear by his name and say, I promise to do X, Y, and Z, and then you don't do it, you are saying, my God is basically nothing. He has no authority to keep me accountable. He's not going to get mad. It's going to be okay because really I'm God and I get to do what I want, is how you are treating God. Now, that doesn't make it true, but that's in essence what you are communicating to the person you made the vow to by God's name. Okay. And it says at the end of verse 11 in chapter 5, right? For the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. You act like that, guess who's coming after you? God himself is going to come after you, right? You might treat God as nothing, but he's not nothing. So you better watch your back. Not that you can do anything about it, right? If God's coming after you, there's nothing you can do. But he's going to come and he's going to get you.
So is how you treat God, is that evidenced in the actions of 6 through 9?
Yes. Yes. So how do you uphold and honor God's name besides just keeping your vows, right? We're going to talk about it today. You value life. Right? You value purity. Now, these are all in the negatives. We're going to talk about them in the positive sense, like the flip side of the, right? Do not murder. Well, what's the opposite of do not murder, right? It's your valuing life. Okay? These are ways that you honor God for who he is, who he really is. Does that help?
Excellent. Thank you.
When Michelle taught it, it wasn't even that, like, you're taking a vow even in God's name. It was just saying, like, hey, I'm going to bake you some brownies.
Right.
I need to.
Right. The New Testament takes it there. Right. It says you don't even need to swear by. Right. Because they would swear by the temple and the altar and all these. And the New Testament is like, forget that. Just let your yes be yes and your no, no. Right. As a Christian, if people know that you serve God, when you say you're going to do something, you better do it because it's as if you've sworn by God. Right. And when you don't, it's like, well, you're unfaithful. So does that make your God unfaithful? Right? So you don't, that's where it ends up. But in the Old Testament, I think it was more common than now, right? We don't typically go around, we just do sometimes say like, I promise or whatever, but we don't typically say, I swear by God himself, you know, unless, right, you're swearing into court, right? I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. That's this, you know, you are saying God himself is going to hold me accountable. Now, when people say in court, they're just repeating, right, or whatever, and they don't necessarily even believe in God, but it's that idea. Good. Anything else? Okay. So we are in command 4. So can someone read for me Deuteronomy 5, verses 12 to 21?
Labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your cattle or your sojourner who stays with you, so that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. Honor your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be prolonged, and that it may go well with you on the land which the Lord your God gives you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, and you shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, or his male servant, or his female servant, his ox or his donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
Okay, so command 4, right, is observe the Sabbath. Now, this is the first time that the Ten Commandments have deviated from Exodus 20. Okay, up through this point, they've been, I think, exactly the same. But Exodus 20, this is what it says about Sabbath, which is Exodus 28 through 11, okay? It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter, your male or your female servant, or your cattle or your sojourner who stays with you. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and day and made it holy. Okay? So there are three differences between Exodus 20, 8 through 11, and Deuteronomy 5, 12 through 15. Okay? And there are reasons, right? Moses is not stupid. He didn't forget what he said before or what he wrote before. Okay, there are differences, and there are differences for a reason. Remember, Exodus 20, 8 through 11 is given at Sinai, spoken by God himself, okay, in the hearing of all of Israel, first generation. Deuteronomy 5 is spoken by Moses to the second generation. Okay, so Exodus 20 is God himself to the first generation, right? And this is when everybody gets freaked out, and that'll be the rest of Deuteronomy 5 after we get past the Ten Commandments. Okay, everybody gets scared because they're hearing God speak directly. Deuteronomy 5 is Moses saying it again to the second generation, and so he makes some changes. Okay, the first one is if you look at Exodus 20, verse 8, it says, "Remember the Sabbath day." Deuteronomy 5, verse 12 says, "Observe the Sabbath day." Does anyone's version say something different? Okay, so in Exodus 20, it's remember. In Deuteronomy 5, it's observe. Okay, Exodus 20, this is a new commandment. Okay, they are to remember the Sabbath. They are to get in the habit of doing this, taking Sabbath day off. Okay, Deuteronomy 5, Israel has been theoretically observing Sabbath now for 40 years. Some of this generation, it's been their entire lives they have observed Sabbath. Okay, but Israel is also about to enter Canaan. Okay, and they need to demonstrate Sabbath truth to the nations. So Moses changes it to observe. It's not just about remembering. Yeah, you still got to remember to do it, but it should be your habit now. So make sure that you observe it properly, because Sabbath is going to send a message to the nations around you. And now it's even more important, because when you're wandering in the wilderness, you know, you're a people without a land, and the nations are like, what is this group doing? Okay. But now you're going to be in Canaan and you're going to be settled, and everybody's going to have their eye on you, and they're going to watch what you do. Okay. So now it's even more important you observe Sabbath to keep it holy. Okay. It reemphasizes that these commands are actions that Israel is to do to live out creation theology. Okay. They are going to speak Sabbath truth to the nations, right? We set aside this day because God is one creator, right? And two, this is what we're all trying to get back to. We should have been in Sabbath rest forever, okay? But we blew it. So that's the first difference. The second difference is the emphasis on more stuff, really. Okay, if you look in Exodus, the passage, it talks about your male and your female servants and your cattle and the sojourner. Okay? But in Deuteronomy, it talks about your ox and your donkey, then your cattle and your sojourner, and it mentions the male and female servants twice. Okay? It says, "You shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant." And then at the end of verse 14 again, it says, "So that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well." So in Deuteronomy, Moses adds your ox and your donkey and your slaves twice instead of just once. Okay, so the emphasis is on you're entering the land and you're going to have more stuff. Okay, at Sinai, they had just come out of Egypt. So yes, the Egyptians had given them stuff, right? But they probably didn't have a lot. Remember, Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, they conquered Transjordan, and all of a sudden they're like, we have all this ox and cattle and donkey, you know, and this is great grazing land. We want to settle here. So as they conquer, they're going to get more stuff. They're going to conquer people to have slaves. Okay? So the emphasis is you're going into the land now. You're going to have more stuff, and even all the stuff that you have, your slaves and your cattle, your livestock, they are to also speak forth creation truth, right? Sabbath truth, but you're not to let them work either. Okay. Then the third difference is the reason for Sabbath in Exodus is creation, right? In 6 days, God created rest on the seventh. And the reason for Sabbath in Deuteronomy is what?
To remember what God did for them in taking them out of the land of, or well.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
The land of Egypt.
Yes, the Exodus. So in Exodus, that's ironic, right? In Exodus, it's creation is the reason. And in Deuteronomy, the reason is the Exodus. Okay? So it's creation versus redemption. Right. Remember, we said when we studied Exodus that it's God's signature move, because this is the business is in God is in saving people. And the Exodus from Egypt was God physically saving Israel to demonstrate the spiritual reality that he needs to save them spiritually, which is what Christ came to do. Okay. So God is creator and rested. In Exodus, so Israel was to rest. But now Israel is about to enter Canaan. Okay? And their message to the world is that Eden has not been lost. We can make it back to Eden. We can be a picture of what the world was supposed to be like. Right? Do we remember the tabernacle? And the blue and the reds and the purples, right? The tabernacle was supposed to be a picture of a mini Eden. Okay, we're always trying to get back to Eden. Okay, and what's the proof that we can get back to Eden? Is the Exodus. God brought a nation, and we talked about this before, that this is something that has never, ever been done in history before and has never been done since. Right? That a people is entrenched in another nation, and through great miracles and signs and wonders, their God brings them out, right? And totally decimates the other nation. It's never been done before, and it's never been done since. So the Exodus is proof that God can do this. He can restore Eden, okay? He can restore us back to the Sabbath rest that we were supposed to go to, okay? So God controls the very purpose of creation. Okay, commands 1 and 2 set God's position. He is God above all God, all gods, right? Command 3 deals with the personhood of God. You don't take God's name in vain. You don't misrepresent who he is. Command 4, Sabbath, says that God is very involved in his creation, right? Have you guys all heard of the deism, right? Our founding fathers, a lot of them were this. They thought that God was creator God, right? So they could believe the first three. God is positionally above. He is our authority, right? God, don't take God's name in vain. He is a person, but they thought God as the cosmic watchmaker, right? He wound up the universe, and then he just abandoned it to let it run its course, right? Command 4 says, no, that's not this God. God is very involved in creation. He set the very purpose for creation. Man messed it up, right? But God still has a purpose, and he still has the power to restore it back to what it was. And that proof is in the Exodus. If this God is so mighty to do something that is unprecedented and never been matched since, he is also powerful enough to restore us back to creation and to Eden.
Did they realize
yes.
He wasn't actually restoring it at that time?
Yes. They were to be a picture. I mean, you could look around and know that God hadn't restored Eden. Yes, but the proof was if God can do this to a nation, then he can also bring us back to Eden. Right, and since Eden, right, who were they looking for? Who was Israel always supposed to be looking for? The seed, the one that is going to crush the serpent's head, right, and bring us back to Eden. Okay, and I can't remember if we talked about this or not, but when Jesus is dying on the cross, did we talk about this? And he says to the thief, "Today I will see you in paradise." Did we talk about this? Okay. That word for paradise in Greek.
Oh, yes, we did.
Okay. The way that the Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Old Testament. The way they always translate Eden is paradise. Okay, so when Jesus is saying to the thief in the cross, today I will see you in paradise, he is saying to that thief, today I will see you in Eden. It will be done. It will be restored. We are getting back to Eden. Now, we're not there yet, right? But for that thief, he is. It's done. The kingdom
so it's
is
really not even referring to heaven, technically.
Right? But that's what heaven is. Well, I mean, our ultimate heaven, our ultimate state is a restoration of Eden.
Okay, so I see. You're not referring to... Okay, yeah. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so God has the power to do that, and that is... the proof of that is in the Exodus. Okay? Israel is to live by God's goals, purposes, and aims. Okay? God controls Israel's time. Sabbath is the first festival in Leviticus 23 when we studied Israel's calendar. Okay, in Leviticus 23, Sabbath is the first one mentioned, and every other festival afterwards, a bunch of them have, and treat this day like a Sabbath day. Oh, and this day will be like a Sabbath day to you, right? So every feast after that is patterned after Sabbath. If it was a week-long feast, a lot of sometimes the first day and the last day of the feast were to be treated like Sabbath days, even if they didn't technically fall on Sabbath. Okay, so Sabbath was the pattern for the feasts.
What did you say a second ago? Aim something or aim?
Oh, I said Israel was to live by God's goals, purposes, and aims. Okay, he was the one that dictated their time. Sabbath is the primary one, but even after that, right? Leviticus 23, he dictates their calendar. When does your year start? How are you to celebrate it? What are you to do? What are you not to do, right? And they had three feasts where everybody was supposed to travel to Jerusalem. We haven't quite got there yet, but... to celebrate. And so God dictated what you did and when you did it for all of Israel. He was in charge of their calendar, and it started with a weekly day that God said, you set aside this day for me. Okay, because I am in charge of your time, and I will be treated as holy. Right, so for us, right, we don't stand under the command that we can't do anything work-like or something like that, right? But we need to still live out the truth that God is in charge of our time. So how do we do that? Now, we have more freedom under Christ that maybe it looks a little different for everybody, but do we live out that creation truth that God is in charge of my time, not me, right? Which I think a big part of it is going to church on Sunday. Well, I'd rather sleep in and watch the football game. Okay, well, who's in charge of my time? Am I or is God? And if God's in charge of my time, and he says, don't forsake meeting together, then I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to church, right? So how do our lives show that God is the one that is organizing our time and dictating our time?
We also had this guy come to church once, a guy from Dallas Seminary, years ago, and he gave a series of talks on this idea of the Sabbath rest and how for today's believers, the idea of part of our stewardship is resting.
Yes.
Because if we are just constantly working 24/7.
Yes. It's you can't. It's not good for you.
So
yeah.
That concept of a Sabbath rest and taking some time off from your regular vocation.
Right.
To rest your body and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Good. Okay. Command 5. These should go a little faster than the first 4. Okay. Command 5, verse 16, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you, that your days may be prolonged and that it may go well with you on the land which the Lord your God gives you. Okay, so this establishes human authority, right? And it parallels 1 and 2. 1 and 2 is God is his positional authority above all. Okay, God is establishing human authority. Okay, that phrase, and that it may go well with you, that's new in Deuteronomy. In Exodus, it just says, honor your father and mother that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. Okay, so Deuteronomy adds, and that it may go well with you. So Exodus says your days will be prolonged. Deuteronomy adds, and that it'll go well with you. Okay, this is the fundamental, the primary structure that God has established is the family. And when the family is destroyed, the rest of society is destroyed, as we are daily witnesses of. Okay? This is why Satan attacks the family, because you destroy the family, the rest of society is done. Okay, because this is what God established, right? One man, one woman in creation week. Okay. It's the fundamental authority structure. So we have to respect, honor. We obviously, right? Commands 1 and 2, respect, honor, and obey God. Okay. But we also do that when we respect the authority structures he has instituted. Okay. We submit to authority because God is the ultimate authority. In the specific stipulations, we've talked about how each of the specific stipulations will tie back into one of the 10. This is expanded to cover prophets, priests, and kings. Okay, so the why do we have to obey prophets, priests, and kings? Because God set up the human authority of parents, okay? And it ties back into here. So he is setting up, he set up the primary structure of parents, family, right? But then from there, there's also prophets, priests, and kings that you also then have to obey.
Is there a place in scripture that connects those two and specifically, you know, instructs us in obeying prophets, priests, and kings?
It's going to be later in Deuteronomy. Okay. When we get into the specific stipulations. Okay. But because I'm only ever a half step ahead of you guys. I don't know where. It's there.
There is good. If I remember saying this part to my husband, and he asked me that question.
Yes.
Because he's smart.
Yes. It'll come.
I'm always going, I don't know. I think she said something about that, but I don't think I wrote that down.
Yes.
It talks about it in the New Testament also.
Well,
Ephesians.
About.
Like.
Well, in Romans 13, it's government, right? So this will be expanded into the New Testament, but specifically here in Deuteronomy, this is going to be expanded to be other authority as well, okay? But obviously, it is always limited by where our first primary obedience to is to God, okay? So yes, we can obey God by obeying our authority, but when our authority asks us to go contrary to what God has said, then obviously our obedience has to be to God, okay? I think we talked about this before. I can't remember, but yes, we did, because I remember Abby was sitting right here, right? We have to teach our children to honor and obey us as parents, right? Because if they cannot obey human authority, they cannot obey God, heavenly authority, God, right? Because it is much easier to obey specific commands that you hear coming out of someone's mouth that you can see, okay? That's easier than commands written down in a book from an authority you cannot see, okay? But if you want your children to be able to obey God, they need to be able to obey you first, okay? And so practically, this facilitates the teaching and passing on of the covenant, right? If your kids are to honor you, they need to know why, they need to know what, they need to know how, and they need to know where that authority comes from, right? My children don't obey and honor me just because I'm mom. They obey and honor me because this is the authority God has set up. If it's just me, well, they don't like that. And if it's just my authority, well, when they grow up, they have their own authority, so forget you, mom. But if it comes from God, right, who has done so much for them, who has sent his son to die on the cross for their sins, that brings a whole nother flavor, right? It is delegated authority from somebody who actually has authority, right? Me as mom really have no positional authority myself, only that is delegated from God. It is only delegated authority, okay? And this honor, right, it's supposed to last a lifetime because Moses is giving this to the second generation, and the second generation, they are all adults, right? Because, I mean, he's talking primarily to adults. And so he's giving this command to adults to honor your father and mother. Okay? So some of them are going to have their father and mother maybe standing right next to them. Right? Because maybe their dad is 59, you know, and there's over 20, but somewhat, you know, whatever, 39, 29, something like that. Okay? And so that honor needs to last a lifetime. So this would extend to caring for your parents in their old age. Okay, because this command is given to adults, whereas in Ephesians 6, right, that command is given specifically to children And that says, notice, that says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Then it quotes the Old Testament, honor your father and mother. This is the first command with a promise that it may go well with you and live long in the land. Here, it doesn't say obey your father and mother. It says honor your father and mother. Okay, now the two are tied together, right? If you never learn to obey as a child, then you're most likely not going to honor when you get to be an adult. Did you have something to say, Anne?
When my daughter was probably the 9 to 10 year old, and she'd been going to a Christian school, but we're up in her bedroom, and I don't remember what the deal was, but they were not behaving, and I went up there, and I told her to do something,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't going to be done. I quoted Ephesians.
Yeah.
It was like, oh. And she did it. Because right then and there, it took it away, just what you said. Mom said no. God said,
right.
Do what mom says.
Right.
And it was a whole different picture to her, and she just did what she was told. And
yeah.
It was amazing. But,
right.
Works.
Yeah.
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 So what you teach them, and it's too bad I hadn't been able to start real little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Command 6, verse 17, you shall not murder. Okay? The opposite of this is that you preserve life. Okay? And this reflects God's name. God is the author of life. He breathed life into man, and that was how creation was supposed to be, all about life. There was no death. The animals didn't even eat other animals. They only ate plants and fruit. Okay? So God is the God of life. He created life. He breathed life. And it is only sin that brought death. Right? And this is why theistic evolution has a ton of problems. Okay? Because then you have millions and millions of years of death and disease and dying before sin. Okay?
Is that what, I'm sorry if you said it just 1 second ago because I was writing. Is that why we originally were herbivores and we humans only ate plants and
yes.
too.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Man was not, so whether man obeyed or not, they probably didn't because the world got so wicked that God was going to flood them. But God gave Adam and Eve all the fruit and the plants in the garden to eat. Okay? God does not tell man that he can eat animals until after the flood. Okay, so once Noah gets off the ark, then God puts the fear of man in animals. So prior to that, animals acted different than they do today. They were not afraid of man because God hadn't given them as a food source, right? They didn't need to run away because man was not supposed to kill them. There was no death originally, so there was no fear of man. Now, we know that the world got so bad that God flooded the world. So whether man obeyed that part of what God had said, highly unlikely, but we don't know. It doesn't specifically say, okay? But it wasn't until after the flood, after Noah, that God specifically says, now you can eat animals.
No animal fear, and I never realized that until after the flood, not the fall.
Yes, after the flood. He says, I'll put the... I can look it up for you, but it's in Genesis.
No, I know. I guess I just always thought it was after the fall, but I never thought that deeply about it.
I should have asked. Well, we also talked about it in Genesis, but that was a long time ago. Genesis 9:2. So, well, I'll start in 9:1. This is the Noahic covenant. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. The fear of you and the terror of you will be on every beast of the earth and on every bird of the sky. With everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea into your hand they are given. Every moving thing that is alive shall be food for you. I give all to you as I gave the green plant.
Remember the food part, but not the fear part.
Yeah. Yep. So... And as you can see, if all the Ten Commandments tie back to Genesis, right, Genesis 1 to 3, this puts an extra emphasis on why we got to get Genesis 1 to 3 right.
Yeah.
Right? If we don't, if Genesis 1 to 3 is an allegory or not factual or didn't really happen or just a story, right, it takes away the reason to obey the law. If it's not really true, it didn't really happen, or some weird whatever, it's just poetry, right? then it, like, the rest of the law crumbles. There is no foundation.
And why did it, even if you minimize Genesis, how about the rest of the Old Testament?
Yeah, exactly.
Why were they even bothering to
right.
obey all that stuff?
Right, exactly.
Or to get chastised when they disobey.
Exactly, yeah, yep.
So you said all the commandments fall back on...
Tie back to Genesis 1 to 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all right. And that's what's in red here. Yes. Correct.
And they weren't afraid of him, so that's how he got
it. Yeah. Brought
him too. Yeah. 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 Yes.
Just to clarify, you said they didn't eat them. They didn't eat the animals, but they did kill them.
Yes, they sacrificed. Okay. They would sacrifice, right? Because Cain and Abel. Right? We have no record, but obviously God had told them something about sacrifice, because when God clothes Adam and Eve, right, he makes the first sacrifice. The first animal has to die on their behalf to provide them clothes, right? And obviously with Cain and Abel, they knew, because Abel's sacrifice honored, pleased God, and Cain's did not, and Cain gets mad, right? And God says, if you just do what's right, implying you know what's right, you know what you're supposed to do, and you didn't do it, right? So we don't have that record, but obviously God had to still be very intimately involved in talking to man and let him know what to do. So animals still died, but, and like I said, because the world got so sinful, they probably, my guess would be they probably ate them. But God did not give them that for food until after the flood, technically. Yeah, no, that's fine. Yes, no, they still sacrificed. Okay, so back to do not murder, okay? So preserving life reflects God's name, okay? The fall brought death, right? Israel was to be a society that valued and prized life. This was very countercultural in that day, and it is very countercultural in this day, right? We think we're so advanced and better than the pagan cultures, and we're actually the opposite, right? They offered their babies to Molech, but on a very small scale compared to how we kill our babies today. Okay, so we've just gotten way better at doing it. The word for murder in Hebrew is ratzah, which doesn't really matter, but it can be murder or manslaughter. Okay, so this is premeditated murder or accidental, I was chopping down a tree and my axe head fell off and hit you and killed you. Okay, you are to value life. You are to not murder. It is not your job to take a life unless God has specifically told you. This does not include capital punishment or war. Okay, this word for murder. It includes premeditated and manslaughter, but does not include capital punishment or war. Capital punishment in the Hebrew society was a time when God said, you do X, you die. Okay, so then the people were supposed to carry that out, but really it was God saying, if you did this sin, then you are dead. Okay, and then war in this time, right, was God saying, you go wipe out this nation because it's a judgment on their sin. So really it is always God saying, this person must die. And in essence, it's God taking that life. Okay, but man, Israel, you are not to take life. Okay, you are not to hate someone and take it, and you are not to accidentally take it, right? And that's why there were the cities of refuge, okay? Because there are still degrees of sin. Obviously, manslaughter is, quote-unquote, better than murder, right? Murder, the punishment is death. Manslaughter, there was grace and mercy in the law, and you could run to a city, and so there were still consequences. You couldn't just live your life free, right? But you did not have to pay for it with your life if you got to the city in time and if they determined that it was manslaughter, okay? But this command covers both. Okay. God is the author of life, and so he is the only one that can rightfully take it. It is not our job to take it. It was not Israel's job to take it, right? And this includes your own life and our world's fascination with euthanasia or assisted suicide or whatever. Okay. We seem to be a world all about death. As Christians, we are to be a people of life.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
Up until the time of the flood, no one ate meat?
Okay. I'm guessing they probably did. What I'm saying is they were not supposed to. Because the world got so sinful, so bad, it says that every inclination of the heart was wicked. Okay? To where God gets to the point where he says, forget this, I'm starting over again. I'm killing everybody except for 8 people. Okay? He's starting over. He's basically starting over with Adam and Eve again. It's just now they have 3 sons and 3 wives. Okay? So my guess is they probably did eat meat. My point is God had not given it to them to eat, so they shouldn't have. In the garden, God gave them all the plants and all the fruit of all the trees, right? That was to be their food. It wasn't until after the flood that God gave them, specifically said, you can eat meat. So between those 2 points, they probably did, but they weren't supposed to because God had not given it to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good. Any other questions? Okay, command 7, don't commit adultery. The opposite of this is purity. Okay, we talked about how when they sinned, they realized they were naked, a loss of purity. Okay, this is also about order in creation. God established order in creation. Everything reproduces after its kind. Okay, God set boundaries. We are not supposed to cross those boundaries. I've heard it argued if there was not one verse in the Bible against homosexuality, Genesis 1 and 2 would be a firm enough argument against homosexuality. What did God create? One man and one woman. And this is how you reproduce, right? Their command, be fruitful and multiply. You cannot do that with 2 men. You cannot do that with 2 women. Okay, so Genesis 1 and 2 in and of itself is a sufficient argument for the Christian to stand against homosexuality. Now, the Bible is much more clear about homosexuality than that. I mean, we have Sodom and Gomorrah in Genesis, okay? But even if there was not another verse, this is God's created order, one man, one woman, right? Adam didn't get 2 wives, right? It wasn't one man, one woman, and then another man, another woman, and then you got to switch wives. Okay, one man, one woman. That's it. That's God's created order. That's how you do things. Israel was supposed to live how God created it, how they were to do things. I don't know if you remember, but when we studied Genesis, it'll say things like, and Adam knew his wife, right? And Cain was born, right? And Cain knew his wife, and da 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 da. Lamech, do you remember him? He was the first one to have how many wives?
2.
And it says Lamech took 2 wives, right? It doesn't say Lamech knew his wives, right? Because this is now no longer marriage. It is outside the created order. Lamech was supposed to have 1. Instead, he has 2. He has violated the creation order. This is not how it's supposed to be. So therefore, it is now no longer marriage. And Genesis uses different language to describe it. Okay? I'm sure it's in your Genesis notes too. It would have been like 5:4:5. 4:19. So if you look at here, if you look at Genesis 4:1, okay, it says now the man, which is Adam, had relations, and in the Hebrew that is literally new. So now the man had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. Okay, so in the Hebrew, it's literally Adam knew his wife. Okay, then if you go to Genesis 4:17, it says Cain had relations with his wife, and she conceived. In the Hebrew, it's literally knew. Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. Right, and then Enoch became the father of Methushael, and Methushael became the father of Lamech. Then in verse 19, Lamech took to himself 2 wives. And then one was Adah, the other was Zillah. Verse 20, Adah gave birth to Jabal. So it never says Lamech knew, or in the NAS had relations with his wives. Why? Because this is now no longer marriage. Marriage, even Cain, the murderer Cain, had true marriage because he only had one. Okay? But Lamech, he doesn't have marriage anymore because he took. He stepped outside the created order. Okay? Don't commit adultery. Live within the created order, especially in sexuality. This is about purity. You do not mix things that don't go together. You don't get one man and two women. You don't get one man and one man. You don't get one woman and one woman. It doesn't work that way. That is not marriage. That is not the created order. Okay? You lose purity when you mix things that should not be mixed. Okay? God is holy, pure, and separate, right? That's who he is. That's what his name is, his essence. Okay? So for us, we are to be holy, pure, and separate. We cannot mix things that do not go together. In the specific stipulations, this is going to go as far as don't mix the cloth in your clothes and don't mix the seed in your field, right? God is a pure, holy God. We do things a very specific way to be a picture of God's holiness and purity. And especially in your sexuality, you live out the created order and you do not get to define that yourself. Okay. Adultery is unfaithfulness to your spouse and to God, right? Which is equivalent to having other gods. This is why in the Old Testament, so many, and we're going to see it in, is it here too? I don't remember. It's so many times. At least in chapter 6. God is a jealous God, right? We've already seen it in chapter 4. God is a jealous God. I don't think it's in the rest of chapter 5. Okay. But adultery, that's why having other gods is compared to adultery. Okay? Making an idol is compared to adultery. God is a jealous God. You do not mix things that should not be mixed. Okay, command 8, do not steal. This is ownership, lordship. Okay? God has the rights to all of creation and can give or withhold as he sees fit. Okay? So Israel is to reflect this. If God has given something to you, I have no right to it. I do not get to take it. You have worked for it. You have earned it. Whatever, God has chosen to bless you in that way, right? I am defying your ownership and God's lordship by then going and taking what is yours. Okay? Our government needs to learn this one. not to make it political. Okay. Okay, so Israel would reflect God's name when they honored that in others, right? That what is theirs, God has given them, that's his right to do that, and it is not your place to question it or to take it. Command 9, do not bear false witness. This is about justice, right? Because we talked about this applies in court. God is just, and Israel was to judge righteously. Okay, remember we talked about that, chapter 3, I think. I'm not going to be able to find it right away. Not chapter 3. I don't know where it was. I don't remember. Might have been chapter 1. Okay, but Israel's job was to judge righteously, and we talked about that their judgments would bring about righteousness, because that is going to be a mirror of what God is going to do. His judgments are actually going to make people righteous when he comes and rules in the millennium. Okay? To lie in court is unfaithfulness to God and man. Okay? So we are to have integrity, honesty, and justice. Right? If you want to properly reflect God's name, this is what Israel was to be all about. Truth is to be prized. And I think this is one reason in our crazy world today, when there are so many narratives going around, there is one truth, and it is our job as Christians to discover it. Okay? And then stand by it, regardless of what the culture says. And that gets harder and harder to do. Okay? Sometimes it's hard to discern the truth. And then when you do, it is hard to stand by it because everybody else is not. Okay.
It feels like that's in everything.
Yes.
You try to find out, you know, like about, you know, this food or that food or
yes.
you know, vitamins or this or that or is it good for you or is it bad for
you? Yes. And there's some point when you can need to not go too far down the rabbit hole.
Right,
but still, I know that's what I think sometimes too. I'm like, there is a truth here, you know, but what is it? And sometimes it's really hard to define and discern and then, you know, to act accordingly. But as Christians now, and obviously there are going to be varying degrees of how much it really matters, right? Okay. But so first we stand on the truth of God's word. Right. But we need to have a very clear understanding of how that would impact all of our areas of our life so that we can have that wisdom and that discernment to be able to sift through the, you know, piles of information that come and the different stories that we're told and whatever. But yes, we are to be all about truth. Okay. Which also means you have to have a certain amount of humility, right? Because if you are wrong, you need to love truth more than you love being right, right? So that if you are shown to be wrong through scripture or whatever, right, you can humbly say, oh, okay, well, now I'm going to stand with the truth now that I know better, right? And not dig in your heels and just say, no, right, I'm right. No, we need to have an amount of humility to be able to be convicted by the truth. All right, and the 10th commandment, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not desire your neighbor's house, his field, male servant, female servant, ox, donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Okay, this is all about contentment. Okay, and command 4, right? Command 4 and command 10 tie together. Command 4, God is sovereign over our time. He gets to dictate to us what we do and when, right? And he's sovereign over our stuff. Israel was to be content with what God gave them individually. Just because God doesn't give me exactly what he gave you does not give me the right to sin, right? And to want what you have to the point of sin. Okay? The interesting thing is this commandment is an internal one, right? How is somebody else going to know? Right? If you murder or steal or commit adultery or dishonor your parents, those are easier to see by somebody else. Okay, once you've been convicted or proven, right? You might hide it for a time, but it's easier to see. Covetousness is internal. It's how you feel in your heart, right? This is not so easy to see unless it results in stealing, adultery, right? Don't covet your neighbor's wife. Well, how is that going to come out? People aren't going to know that until you commit adultery, right? Don't covet your neighbor's house or his field, male servant or ox or donkey, right? That's not going to come out until you steal it or, you know, do something else, okay? So command 10 is an internal reality, okay? Coveting breaks the whole law because it's not love of God or love of neighbor. You're discontent with God because you didn't give me what I wanted, and you're not loving your neighbor because you want what he has to the point of you're willing to sin for it. Okay? Okay. And in a way, Sabbath, command 4, governs 5 through 10, right? If God is sovereign over your time, if God is sovereign over everything, right, then he gave you your parents, and you got to honor them, right? He is the author of life and death. That's not your job, right? He's sovereign, right? He created the created order, one man, one woman. So you don't, I mean, adultery is, I would say 100% of the time, right? A result of covetousness, right? Stealing, covetousness, right? And lying in court. Sometimes you would lie in court, right? To cover up another sin that you did. Okay, so when God is sovereign over everything and you believe that, you are not going to do these. Okay? This is one reason why Sabbath was such a big deal in the New Testament with the Pharisees. Because if you are Lord over Sabbath, you are Lord over everything. And that's why they got so mad at Jesus. because he would not fall under all their petty little rules. They wanted to be Lord of Sabbath and be able to dictate everything about everything. The Pharisees did, right? And that's why they made their gajillion long list of rules. Jesus comes along and heals on the Sabbath. Oh, no, you can't do that. And Jesus is like, yeah, watch me. Okay? I mean, he heals the blind men or whatever he did. The disciples rub grain between their hands, right? And Jesus says, no, my Father, he works on the Sabbath. God's work. If God really stopped working, like, the entire world would just implode, okay? So Sabbath is about lordship. Who is sovereign? And that is why Sabbath is such a big battle in the New Testament, because it's about...
Did you just allude to the Pharisees wanting to be lords?
Yes. Yes. They wanted to dictate everybody, yeah. You can and cannot do this on Sabbath, right? And Jesus comes along and won't submit to their rules.
I mean, I knew what they did, but I never thought of it as right. They were just usurping.
Yes, they're your... Yeah, because God just says don't work. Now they're saying, well, that means this. And if you do not abide by this, then you are not, quote unquote, obeying God. Well, who died and made you God, right? Who died and made you in the place that you are now the one that gets to dictate all that? No, God is the one that's sovereign. And Jesus comes along and is God. And so, of course, he's going to obey Sabbath perfectly, right? Because he does everything perfectly. And they don't like it because it's not their rules. It's not what they said. Right, which is the sin of Adam and Eve, right? Moral autonomy. We want to decide what's right and wrong. We want to be God. We want to be able to dictate, right? God says, no, I'm God, you're not. Okay, questions, the Ten Commandments. Oh my goodness. Questions, last chance, because we're going to move on. All right. With 10 minutes, I think we can finish chapter 5, believe it or not. Okay, can someone read for me verses 22 to 33?
These words the Lord spoke to all your assembly at the mountain out of the midst of the fire, the cloud and the thick darkness with a loud voice, and he added no more. And he wrote them on two tablets of stone and gave them to me. And as soon as you heard the voice out of the midst of the darkness, while the mountain was burning with fire, you came near to me, all the heads of your tribes and your elders, and you said, behold, the Lord your God has shown us his glory and greatness, and we have heard his voice out of the midst of the fire. This day we have seen God speak with man, and man still live. Now, therefore, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of the Lord our God any more, we shall die. For who is there of all flesh that he has heard the voice of the living God speaking out in the midst of the fire, as we have and has still lived? Go near and hear all that the Lord our God will say, and speak to us all that the Lord our God will speak to you, and we will hear and do it. And the Lord heard your words when you spoke to me, and the Lord said to me, I have heard the words of this people, which they have spoken to you. They are right in all they have spoken. Oh, that they had such a mind as this always, to fear me and to keep all my commandments, that it might go well with them and with their descendants forever. Go and say to them, return to your tents. But you stand here by me, and I will tell you the whole commandment and the statutes and the rules that you shall teach them, and that they may do them in the land that I am giving them to possess. You shall be careful, therefore, to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the way that the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live, and that it may go well with you, and that you may live long in the land that you shall possess.
Okay, good. Verse 22, these words that the Lord spoke to all your assembly at the mountain from the midst of the fire. Okay, so these words are specifically the Ten Commandments, right? And remember, Moses is talking to the second generation, but he is treating the second generation as if all of them were there at Mount Sinai. Okay, because this is, we talked about this before, this is the way Revelation works. It is not just applicable to that first generation who heard it. Now, some of the second generation would have been there, but a bunch of them would not have been there, okay? But it's as if they had been there, okay? Because he says to all your assembly at the mountain, right? So Moses is treating them like they are there. So all of Israel is accountable to them, to the 10 words, to the 10 commandments. This is the defining moment in Israel becoming God's people. They have heard God directly speak to them. And, right? He talks about the midst of the fire, the cloud, the thick gloom. We've talked about all that before. With a great voice, and he added no more. So it's these 10. He, God himself, wrote them on 2 tablets of stone and gave them to me. Okay, so God himself wrote them on the 10, on the tablets. This was an awe-inspiring revelation. Okay, for those who witnessed it, and now for those who are just hearing about it, it's as if they were there. Okay, verse 23, when you heard the voice from the midst of the darkness while the mountain was burning, you came near to me, all the heads of your tribes said, behold, the Lord our God has shown us his glory and his greatness. We have heard his voice from the midst of the fire. We have seen today that God speaks with men, yet he lives. Now then, why should we die? Okay, so Israel is scared out of their mind. They are afraid. This has been awe-inspiring. They saw God. They're shaking in their boots. Right? They have heard God and lived, but they are afraid that if they keep hearing God like this, they're going to die. Okay, they know that this God is such holy God. Right when Moses asks God, show me your glory, right? He says, no man can see me and live, right? And that's why he covers him and he only sees the back. Okay. They are afraid, for they say, verse 25, now then, why should we die? For this great fire will consume us. If we hear the voice of our Lord, our God, any longer, then we will die. They couldn't handle it. They knew this God is too much for us. He is too holy. He is too great. We are too sinful. At least at this point, they got it. Okay. We can't hear God anymore. We're going to die. If we have to endure something like this again, we're not going to make it. Okay. This is an expansion of verse 4 through 5, which we talked about last week, where it says, the Lord spoke to you face to face at the mountain from the midst of the fire while I was standing between the Lord and you at that time. Okay. They understood the power and awesomeness of God and that it was a miracle that they survived. Okay, so what do they want? Verse 26, for who is there of all flesh who has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the midst of the fire as we have and lived? Go near and hear all that the Lord our God says, then speak to us all that the Lord our God speaks to you, and we will hear and do it. Okay, so they want Moses to be mediator. We're afraid we're going to die, so we'll let you take the risk. You go hear what God says, and we'll see if you die or not, and then you can come back and tell us. Okay, because we can't handle this. It's too much. God is too much for them. They want Moses to be their mediator. But listen to what they say. It says, verse 27, it says, go near and hear all that the Lord our God speaks. Then speak to us all that the Lord our God speaks to you, and we will what?
Do it.
Yep. Hear and do it. So here Israel commits to obedience. And we talked about this when we studied Exodus. They say, yes, we will do everything you command. And then Moses goes up the mountain. And then what do?
The golden calf.
Because he's gone too long. Okay. So they commit. And we know that they don't. But they are saying, we will hear and do. We will obey. Verse 28, the Lord heard the voice of your words when you spoke to me. And the Lord said to me, I have heard the voice of the words of this people, which they have spoken to you. They have done well in all that they have spoken. Okay, God approves because their attitude is right. They have a right, holy fear of God. They get it. This God is awesome. This God is powerful. We have heard him speak. And by some miracle, we live, but we don't deserve to live. Because us, compared to his holiness, we should have just died. Like, that would have been the right thing to happen to us. And it's a miracle that we have lived. And if we have to do this again, we're going to die. We're probably going to die. Okay? And what does God say? Verse 29. Oh, this is almost like wishful thinking, right? Oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and with their sons forever. God's like, if you could just capture this moment and always have this kind of heart, this would work out great. Okay? But the problem is the law does not change the heart. And we know that first generation, right, they would not keep this heart. They did. They were a rebellious and unbelieving group, okay? But God is saying, if you could just hold on to this attitude, and if you can pass that heart attitude onto your children, right, and to their children, then we will do great always, right? It says, then that it may be well with them and with their sons forever. This is the kind of heart you need to have. You need to realize the power of God, the position you have before God, and be willing to listen and obey. all his commands. Okay. Verse 30, go say to them, return to your tents. But as for you, stand here by me that I may speak to all the commandments, statutes, judgments, and you shall teach them that they may observe them in the land which I give you to possess. Okay, so the people were allowed to go back to their tents. But Moses, right, went up to the mountain to receive the rest of the law. Moses' responsibility is to receive the law and then teach it, right? We're going to see this again in chapter 6. Moses' responsibility, hear the law, teach it. Hear the law, teach it, right? So he was supposed to teach the first generation. They absolutely fell on their faces, failed. So now Moses is teaching the second generation. Why? So that they can obey in Canaan. Okay, verse 32, Moses is now speaking directly to the second generation. So you shall observe to do just as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right and to the left. Okay, Moses reminds the second generation that these are directly God's words. Okay, they are to obey these commands as if they were there at Sinai, as if they had all had this awesome experience and seen God manifest himself in the clouds and the fire and the thunder. Okay, they were to not deviate. Don't go to the right or to the left. You do exactly what God says and only what God says. Verse 33, you shall walk in all the way which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you and that you may prolong your days in the land which you will possess. Okay, they were to have complete obedience, and if they did, right, there would be great horizontal blessings. Okay, your days will be prolonged, and we're going to see this again in chapter 6. In chapter 6, the emphasis is going to be on the vertical relationship. If your vertical relationship is correct, you then will obey, and then you will receive the blessings, the horizontal blessings. Questions, chapter 5. I think it took us, I don't even know how long to get through chapter 5.